Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday.
This is the Two Mats Q&A brought to you by the New European newspaper.
It certainly is.
Should we dive straight in, mate?
Let's just go for it.
Shall I read it out?
Yeah, why not?
This comes from Craig in wonderful Port Glasgow. Gents, is the art of spin or comms being lost? No one from any party seems to be able to form policy and communicate it. Love your insights. Keep up the sterling work. Thank you, Craig. What do you think?
Is the good question, actually, because I think it has declined in the sense that A, voters are much more cynical than they were, and they think everything is spin.
Yeah.
And also social media has kind of added to the noise. So it's much harder for spin doctors to control the message than before social media. But I think that the bigger problem is that in the populist era, there isn't much really good big policy to sell.
Yeah.
So all you're really doing is name calling and attributing blame and fighting culture wars, and that's not even worthy of the name spin, is it?
Yeah.
It's just vilification.
I don't know whether they need to spin so much anymore, because the independence of the press, from which much of the news agenda springs, seems to be almost dead. I mean, the Daily Express the other day ran Thursday morning, ran a front page saying, "The Lords defies the will of the people over Rwanda again." You know, I mean, why would you need to employ a spin doctor when you've got journalists willing to run that kind of shit?
I mean, I think the only caveat I'd say is that if and when Labour win, which the polls suggest they will, last week Ipsos recorded the Tories on 19%,
which
is the lowest they've ever been since Ipsos started recording in 1978. So it looks like a Labour government. Anyway, the things they are going to have to do are going to require a communication strategy, because assuming they do them, that one might argue is a big assumption, but they're going to really have to turn the tanker on a whole bunch of stuff, and that requires I can't remember who first coined the phrase, but teacher politician is a very good phrase, and it was used to describe Thatcher and Blair, both of whom had this ability to explain what they were doing with a combo of show and tell.
Yeah, they were talking to a room full of primary school kids.
Right, a bit, yeah. But I mean, is Starmer a teacher politician? Well, only one way to find out, I suppose.
But
I agree with you. It's the nature of spin has changed in a polarized media ecosphere dramatically.
I know that Labour have been reaching back to New Labour, haven't they?
Yes, they have.
You know, they've been talking to Peter Mandelson,
Lord
Mandelson, a lot. I suppose they'd be daft if they weren't at least communicating with our other editor at large, Alistair Campbell.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's which is good because it's crazy if you've got a hinterland of people who, were in government on and off in both cases for 13 years, not to take advantage of that wisdom. And they are. And I think Jonathan Powell, who was Blair's chief of staff, has been involved in, bringing in talent and talking to future special advisors and so on. And that's all good. Yeah. But what you also need is your own talent. And I have to say, I don't find the comms outfit in Starmer's team, it doesn't do very much,
right,
to be honest.
Right.
I mean, that's what's slightly surprising to me, is that, you talk about Alistair, when between 94 and 97, Alistair was, you know, incredibly busy and working the phones and getting the message out and defining the message and what it was and this is why we're doing it. And, you know, it, look, some people didn't like it. You know, some people said it was too Malcolm Tucker from the thick of it when that came along. But actually, I mean, this is my private view, and it's not just because he's our friend and colleague. I think it was very, very important because, you know, Labour had 18 years in opposition, and it needed to be reframed.
Yeah.
And he and Peter Mandelson, in their different ways, did a lot.
And it had been, by the time they got to the election, it had been stress tested to a degree. It had been, because it had all been out there.
And everyone had had a go, and they'd got answers to pretty much everything. And I think one of the problems in this case is that that is absolutely not the case.
No, that's right.
You know, there are lots of things that, assuming there is going to be a Labour government, and less certainly assuming that it will have a reasonable majority, it's going to have to do big things which will be quite contrary to what has been going on for the last 14 years, and specifically the sort of bin fire post-Brexit.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're going to have to reintroduce the public to, you know, good old-fashioned policy stuff.
The idea that government can achieve something.
Government can achieve stuff. And that, you know, it isn't just about Boris Johnson standing at a lectern saying everything is world-leading. Mm. I mean, that creates a problem for his successors, because some things Britain does, you know, they are world-leading, but most of them aren't.
That's right. That's
and
right.
We want them to be world-leading.
That's right. Thank you, Craig from Port Glasgow. Next question, please.
I was listening to your discussion on non-dom status. This is from Paul C. Thanks, Paul. How seriously are the investigations into whether individuals are complying? If, for example, a non-dom person has properties in the UK and spends all their time in the UK, then does that breach the status? I would like an explanation, as I'm flabbergasted at the attacks on Angela Rayner and how ironic it is. A lot in there, isn't there?
There is. And I mean, I'm not a tax lawyer, and it reminds me we should get Dan Needle,
the to come in and talk about
eminent tax lawyer, brilliant tax lawyer, to come in and chat to us about this kind of stuff. I mean, the things about non-doms are such a spiky issue because it's so iniquitous and it's so symptomatic of almost a financial unpatriotism, you know, that people like Lord Rothermere, for instance, who inherited his Viscount title from his father, who got non-dom status because he had properties in France and spent a lot of time in France. He claims non-dom status.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's disgusting that people would seek to evade, very, very wealthy billionaires would seek to evade paying their fair share of tax to a government, to a nation that could do with every penny it can get its hands on. It disgusts me. But the truth is that it, in the great scheme of things, it doesn't actually account for as much as people think it does, unfortunately. Otherwise, I think people would be urgently cracking down on it.
Yeah, I mean, and also, there's a weird interim period coming because after Labour said they'd get rid of it, Jeremy Hunt nicked the policy and said he was going to abolish it from April the 6th, 2025. And there's going to be this new status called FIG, Foreign Income and Gains Regime, which means that individuals who become UK tax resident after a period of 10 tax years of non-UK residence and meet the conditions will not pay tax, arising in the first four tax years after becoming a UK tax resident, blah, 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 then they'll be expected to pay normal tax.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
This, I'm seriously not a tax lawyer. This strikes me as a bit of a fudge and a recipe for evasion and loopholes and so on. And I mean, one of the things that's worth mentioning, I suppose, which is not, you know, isn't a sort of matter of fiscal technicality, but just a sort of capacity point, is that in the States, the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, is genuinely feared. An IRS investigation is a very, very big deal. In this country, the revenue, the HMRC, has been starved of resources. And do you remember recently there was talk of actually shutting down the helpline for some of the year, and Jeremy Hunt had to step in and say, no, we'll keep it going around the clock. But that's the level they're at. So, of course, when they're starved of resources, they tend to go for smaller targets.
Yeah.
You know, because they don't want to get involved in potential, you know, litigation with people who have bottomless pockets.
Right. So and they just lawyers. bully.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if you are serious, I mean, not just the non-dorm issue, but generally about cracking down on tax evasion and avoidance, you have to resource the HMRC accordingly so that they can actually do what they're paid to do, and so that the notion of being investigated by the revenue is something that frightens the rich, because at the moment it doesn't. Really doesn't.
And the irony that Paul alludes to over Angela Rayner, of course, is trebled by the fact that the Daily Mail and, you know, Jonathan Rothermere's water carrying political editor Dan Hodges on the Mail on Sunday just spent weeks and weeks attacking Angela Rayner for what may or may not be a couple of grand's worth of capital gains tax issue from 10 years ago, while his paymaster has got the most opaque tax arrangements you could imagine.
It's a very, I mean, we mentioned this last week, I think, you know, it is definitely an augur of things to come.
Yeah.
You know, which is that if she survives this current sort of furore, I suspect she will actually.
I hope so.
They're going to go for her. You know, she's been identified by those newspapers as the target in chief.
Do you know what, though?
I think.
I think she's tougher than them. I think she's absolutely nails Angela Rayner. And for better or worse, I think she has got it within her to stand up to any kind of crap that they'd throw at her. I hope so.
I also think it's very smart of, just as it was smart of Starmer during Beergate, that nothing burger, to say, all right, if I am slapped with a penalty, I'll resign. Mm. Which was a risk, because, you know, he might have been, but if the police had been in a bad mood, but he wasn't, and so he didn't. And Rayner has said the same.
Yeah.
Now, I think that cuts through, because I think that we're so used now to conservative politicians having to be sort of literally pulled out, you know, with their fingernails on the awning of the ministerial doors, that Labour politicians preempting this and saying, all right, if I'm found, you know, to have made a serious error, I'm out. Yeah. You know, that's very good.
Establishing a moral line.
Yeah, saying, you know, I haven't done anything wrong, but if in the event that the cops or any of the other authorities that police public standards find that I have made a mistake or made an error, I will go.
Yeah.
Now, this is, I mean, it shouldn't be, but it is actually, after the last 14 years, revolutionary.
I know.
And so, all power to their elbow. I hope they stick to that, because it marks them out.
Yeah, I think. But also, how absurd is it that we're having a bloody conversation about people saying that, or lauding people, and rightly lauding them, for saying, you know, if I've done something wrong, there'll be a consequence.
If the police find that I'm a tax evader, I will stop being deputy leader of the Labour Party. But I mean, we know from, I mean, Nadeem Zahawi was the great example.
Yeah.
You know, it took quite a while. The Tolley report came in, showing that he had seriously been involved in some serious tax shenanigans, and instead of just kicking him out the door, Sunak and he had, I think, 36 hours of debate.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And we've just learned that the Tory party, Sunak, or certainly Conservative Central Office, knew that this MP Menzies had allegedly summoned up $6,500 to pay ransom to two men who were holding him in a room or something really, really dodgy. They've known that since January, apparently, and they've been banging on about Angela Rayner's bloody capital gains tax from 10 years ago.
I mean, I think that my overwhelming memory, if this is indeed the end of an era, and I hope it is that obviously it's been overshadowed by Brexit and the sort of fallout of that. But the extent to which the Tory party, which always had a patrician dimension to it, but it has become the party for people who really think that they are better than us.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
There's just no humility in it at all. You know, it's like, I mean, Partygate is only explicable if you are, and you could see it in Boris Johnson's face during the times he was asked about it in Parliament or by select committees. You know, he was sort of baffled.
Mm.
But I'm me.
It's the arrogance.
It's
Eaton's Fields, honestly.
You know, why are you pretending that I should be subject to the same rules?
You don't get it.
You don't get it. I'm me.
Yeah.
And I think that moving back from that to something like normality would be unbelievably
marvellous.
A really big step
that
forward.
That would be nice, yeah. Right, thank you, Paul C., for that question. Inspired quite a conversation. And by the way, if you like these conversations, The New European is absolutely chock full of them every week.
Chock full of them.
And you can read all our great writers from Will Self, Bonnie Greer, Matthew D'Ancona,
James Ball,
Tannick Koch, wonderful German correspondent every week, our great carousel section.
Paul Mason.
It's all there. And you can subscribe with very easily by going to theneweuropean.co.uk/2mats. And guess what? I'll send you, free of charge, when you subscribe, one of the few copies we've got left of James O'Brien's brilliant book, How They Broke Britain. Yeah, so there we go. Next question, please. Police and crime commissioners... I'm glad you got this question. Police and crime commissioners are up for election on the 2nd of May. I work for one, but few people seem to know about or understand the role. What do you think about their role in our democracy? And that's from Ben Valentine.
It's a really good question. So I confess I had to sort of look it up a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, the reason this is relevant is that on the 2nd of May, elections are taking place for 39 police and crime commissioners. Now, in a lot of cases like London, Greater Manchester, West Yorkshire, the role is combined with that of mayor.
Right.
So, you know, we're not talking about a separate bit, but not everywhere. So it does matter. And it was a reform in 2012. And actually, the interesting thing about it is that Ben's point that people don't know about it is to its credit. Because when it was introduced, and this I do remember, everyone said, oh, it'll be politicized. You know, it'll become like America and the police won't be able to go about their business because the commissioners will be, you know, interfering and doing either, I don't think the word woke was invented in those days or much around in those days, or very right wing things. You know, the commissioners would be bad, and they haven't been. They haven't been.
Right.
And in fact, the fact that people don't know about them very much is sort of a good sign.
So what do they do?
Well, they are mainly involved in sort of police governance. So they set the budget, 5-year police plan. They're responsible for oversight of the police, scrutinising the local forces of performance. They commission criminal justice services. They involve victims a lot.
But they're not members of the police themselves.
Well, the commissioners themselves are politicians. I mean, yeah. I suppose some of them may be former policemen, but, you know, it is a political role. And, you know, there have been some concerns about, you know, the liaison with chief officers and how sort of on top of the issue people are. But it's very, if you trawl it, you don't come up with 10, I mean, it's very unusual because, you know, if you trawl, I don't know, mayors or you know, heads of councils.
Hugely controversial issues.
I mean, on the whole, it's been a very good thing. And I think it interested me because everyone always talks about devolution and how it can work. And one has to be honest and say that, the devolution has been patchy.
Uh-huh.
But in its effectiveness. But this seems to be a model of how it can work well.
Yeah, very good.
And so, you know, more power to their elbow, and you know, it made me want to go off and find more, actually.
And who, you said it was 2012, so was it Cameron that?
Well, it must have been during the, during the coalition.
Yeah, well, okay.
I mean, it'd been around for, I do remember it had been around as an idea in New Labour times.
Yeah.
You know, but it was actually implemented by the coalition.
This podcast, as ever, is brought to you by The New European. You like The New European, Matt, don't you?
I revere it.
You revere it, quite right, because you're in it every week.
I've revered it long before that.
In the company of many other brilliant, brilliant writers.
Whom I revere.
Yeah, and anyway, you can join The New European. If you like the content of this podcast, you will love The New European. And I've got a special offer just for listeners to the 2 Mats. You can sign up from as little as £1 a week and get full access to our online newspaper, our brilliant new app, which we've just relaunched. You can download every edition we've published since the Brexit referendum in 2016. You get audio reads from Alistair Campbell reading out his diary too. You get the ability to comment. There's daily interactive puzzles. People love, depressingly, people love the puzzles almost as much as they love your column, Matt.
I can't comment.
And you get,
I'm busy with my Sudoku over here.
And for an extra pound a week, you can get the actual newspaper delivered to you every week, which is more than a 75% saving on the cover price you pay at the newsagent. So subscribing is the best way to support us. And to tip you over the line, if you're thinking about subscribing to the New European, I'm going to offer everybody a free copy of James O'Brien's brilliant book, How They Broke Britain, which is a terrific read, and it's signed by the author, and that's worth 20 quid. So you get 20 quid's worth of James O'Brien hardback when you subscribe to The New European from just £1 a week. Go to theneweuropean.co.uk/2mats. There's a link in the show notes. You won't regret it.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Next question, please.
After hearing you say kids can go to a doctor, say they are trans and immediately be accepted for medical transition, this is referring to last week's pod, I think, I'm wondering if you have spoken to any trans young people about their experience. From Remy in Spotify.
Well, no, I haven't, but have you?
Well, first of all, we didn't say that, actually.
Yeah.
What we said, which is very different, and what Cass said in the Cass review, was that she had found that children were being referred for puberty blockers after only a handful of sessions, sometimes only two, which is not the same.
Right.
And actually, I have, not through journalism, but other circumstances, spoken to quite a lot of trans young people about their experience. And it's fascinating, and to talk to their families. And my takeaway is absolutely consistent with what Cass says, which is that almost invariably, gender incongruence or dysphoria coexists with eating disorders, neurodiversity, difficult family situations, self-harming, and that is rarely straightforward. And the ones I've met, the trans kids and families, I liked immensely. And you know, one sort of listened and you sort of shut up. You're very much in receive mode, you know. And the difference between that and the kind of bellowing on social media of self-appointed trans activists couldn't have been more acute.
And that rings true to me, because although I haven't spoken to directly to trans kids about this issue. Friends of ours, we've got a number of families actually have got trans kids, or their children are in relationships with trans kids. And what I find really beautiful about that is that they talk about it totally without any kind of complication. Well, obviously it's complicated. All teenagers are complicated. And then if you've got something like this going on in the background,
without anger,
it's even more complicated. But we can all talk about it quite openly.
Yes.
And in a civilized way, and in a curious way, where people can say, oh, well, hang on, what does that mean? Does that mean that they, this, that, what, you know, trying to work through what these relationships mean in a friendly way, a community way. It's like they're friends of us, you know, and there's no problem. It's not an issue. But like you say, compare and contrast with the utter violence of the conversation on social media.
Yes,
totally you would different. Think it was a whole different game.
There's another assumption embedded into Remy's question, with which I would take issue, which is, I'm wondering if you've spoken to any trans young people about their experience. Now, absolutely, 100%, and it's a good journalistic principle, apart from anything, you should always speak to people about something you're trying to find out about and write about and think about and talk about.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's what Romy means, because there's a sort of article of faith in trans thinking, trans ideology, that only trans people can say anything of value on the trans issue, and that has its analogues in other areas of social justice and contention, that only if you are filling as applicable can you talk about. Now, of course, you know, I can't talk about what it's like to be a black woman, but at the same time, it's really important that I understand and get involved in the conversation. I mean, I am a citizen and I do have a brain, you know, and I think this idea of, you know, that we all have to exist in silos is the absolute opposite of how a modern society works, you know.
Yeah.
So, of course, ignorance is not acceptable, but, you know, you can't just insist that people take stenography from the group in question. That's not how a society works.
Quite. Okay, well, thank you, Remy, for that question. I say thank you because we're open to all questions.
Absolutely. No, grateful for it.
Yeah. Next question, please.
I've read The Guardian as my daily news source for as long as I can remember, but have become increasingly dissatisfied with their constant criticism of Labour. Given the overwhelming hegemony of right-wing press in the UK, this is of concern to me. Is there a credible alternative for a daily news source that is left-leaning? As I understand it, the New European doesn't include a roundup of daily UK news. If I'm wrong, please forgive me, and I would switch my subscription in a heartbeat. From Adrienne.
Adrienne. Well, thank you, Adrienne. We don't do a roundup of daily UK news, because
the website is updated regularly.
The website's updated every day, but we don't. I mean, if you wanted to find out about a factory fire in Manchester, you're not going to find it probably on the New European's website, but you can find it for free on the BBC's website. And I'd like to think everything we do is differentiated, because we take that the point you're making very seriously. Is that the whole point of the New European is to provide a kind of counterbalance to some of this absolutely corrosive right-wing nationalism that has been totally normalised in much of our press. You know, I'd like to say, well, at least The Guardian's criticisms of Labour come from a good place, I think, you know.
Mostly.
And, mostly. I mean, some of it is just vitriol and narcissistic.
They won't take yes for an answer.
They're terrified
of a Labour victory.
That's right, yeah. That's right. Well, I mean, commercially, it's not great news for them. But I think, you know, if you look at the balance of the UK press, there's no question it's heavily weighted towards the right. And even if the New European is a drop in the ocean, well, at least it's a drop on the right side of the scales, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, it made me think this question quite deeply, because I really thought, wow, that's true. And I'm so pleased to be associated with the New European in that context. And it made me reflect, you know, how do I, because obviously I read the New European naturally, but and I realised that the answer is that in my sort of first coffee, you know, when you get up and see what's going on in the titles that you always read, I read the New York Times because it's a liberal global newspaper that our friend Mark Thompson, now at CNN, had turned into an absolutely storming
powerhouse.
Yeah. And it does cover world affairs brilliantly. Yeah. And, it's not without its flaws. But to be honest, I, as a sort of global liberal hub, if you like, I find it very useful. But I hadn't thought of it in that context before Adrian's question.
The other title that's worth mentioning is the Daily Mirror, of course.
Yes.
Which, I'm massively conflicted about the Daily Mirror because I love it to bits. I love the title, I love the history of the newspaper, I love what it's set out to be. But I do feel it hasn't fulfilled its potential because of the corporate structure that it exists in, where the need for profits, big profits, to please investors means that the levels of journalism have been eroded and eroded and eroded. But nevertheless, put that to one side, some brilliant journalists have worked on the Daily Mirror in recent times and have shown what can be done.
Pippa Crera,
exactly. You know, Alison Phillips, brilliant editor, gave it real loudy in as best she could until, you know, it became an impossible and thankless task, I guess. But the title, The Daily Mirror, if you imagine that there could be a popular newspaper with the same kind of punch that the Mail has in Middle England.
That's it.
If you had the Daily Mirror punching to the same level in more traditional working class families, perhaps, or certainly left-leaning families, that could be a really decisive element in our news diet.
And it is one of the, you know, if you think of the history of this country, it is one of the great titles.
Oh, yeah. If people want to understand the history of the Mirror, it's extraordinary.
I mean, it really is. It's one of the most consequential and important newspapers in the history of this country. And
it would be a great shame if it just got reduced to sort of,
I really hope, for good things rubbish. For it in, you know, and again, making the assumption that Labour wins, you know, that I really hope it rises to the challenge because it's such an opportunity.
Yeah. Okay. Good stuff. Thank you for that great question, Adrienne. However one says that. Okay, from Steptoe67 via Spotify. We all know what generation you're from, I think.
You dirty old man.
When did calling politicians by their first name become a thing? I know we had Maggie, but now it's everybody. They're not our mates. Well, you can say that again. Back to full names or surnames, please.
Very interesting question. There's been a sort of sporadic, hasn't there? Because like Callahan was Sonny Jim.
Right.
And McMillan was not Harold, but Super Mac. You know, they're the nicknames. And, you know, Disraeli was Dizzy.
Was he?
Yeah.
He was the first Dizzy.
He was bonkers. I don't think Gladstone was routinely referred to as Billy Bollocks, but I could be wrong. I might need to go and check back the diaries for that. I mean, I suppose we all know what we're talking about here, don't we? Because the tipping point was something that makes, we were talking about Alistair earlier, Alistair Campbell, that makes Alistair furious is Boris Johnson being referred to as Boris.
Boris, right?
And I think Alistair was the first person to sort of really major on this. And he's absolutely right, because the description of Boris Johnson as Boris, because it's a distinctive first name, I suppose that's part of it. But also it implied an intimacy and an indulgence that was sort of symbolic of a lot else, which was letting him get away with it.
Yeah.
And I remember when I first read Alistair saying that, I thought, yeah, absolutely. You know, because actually I had referred to him as Boris in some of my columns. And after that, I made a point of referring to him as Mr. Johnson or Johnson, and it felt different.
It's weird though, because I know that when we've been writing headlines on the cover of in Johnson's time, and you'd put you'd instinctively write, you know, Boris,
of course, yeah,
and then you say no, change it to Johnson, but then you do know you have to factor in that people are going to have to read it twice before they appreciate who you're talking about.
I would plead for an amnesty on headlines.
Yeah. Yeah, I do get that.
You know, I really would, because I think that, I mean, for example, I was checking back when it was registered, and it was July 2022 in the leadership campaign, the first leadership campaign, that Ready for Rishi was registered on Twitter, as
by
it then
Rishi,
was.
By Rishi.
Well, by his campaign, Ready for Rishi with a cheeky four rather than F-O-R, the numeral four,
oh,
right?
Oh, my God.
And I think that Rishi and Rish, as his friends, if indeed he has one, call him. It's funny because not because of the name itself, but because of the way that it's been deployed in this sort of faux matiness from the world's most tetchy small person.
It's, the flip side is it's quite useful, because when you call him Sunak or Johnson or you say,
yes.
I mean, Margaret Thatcher was never called Maggie in Liverpool in the 70s, I can tell you. She was she was called many, many things, the best of which was Thatcher,
yes.
You know. So it is a way.
I always felt Thatch was the best thing.
Yeah, well, the Ben Elton
thatch.
Kind of Thatch. Yeah, I don't know. There was even that was kind
Maggie,
of
Maggie, 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 out. Was quite a sort of.
But it at least gives you the opportunity to establish yourself as somebody who's not on side.
I think. I mean, I do think that the Boris Johnson case is uniquely terrible, and you know, we should avoid it. I suspect that Starmer will be described as Keir in many a headline, certainly in the red tops, because Starmer's longer than Keir.
It is,
you know,
Keir's wonderful short for a headline.
But I don't think that will imply that the writers of the headlines or indeed the editors of the newspapers want to be mates with him.
It happens. It's not just in the UK as well. I remember when I was working in Argentina for a couple of years, and one of the first things I said to the editors of Clarín, where I was working, the newspaper there, was, why did they call Cristina Kirchner, who they were politically opposed to, Cristina? Or, you know, it was Cristina. I said, it's so feminine and friendly, you know, it's so nice. And they said, well, it's just how everyone talks about it. You know, if you put Kirchner there, they wouldn't know who you were talking about.
Have you noticed that one of the interesting exceptions to this is who was called the Donald before he was...
Yeah.
But no one calls him...
It's true that
Trump.
Yeah. But that's his brand, isn't it?
Trump is just, it's also the perfect name for him. I can't understand. Yeah. I'm not quite sure why.
It's a sort of, you hope, it feels like an embarrassing. We did, Chris Barker, who used to do covers for us, who's a brilliant art designer, did a picture of his backside with a sort of, I think it had a kind of Trump wig on it, but it had the speech bubble coming out of his backside, and it just said Trump.
That's very, very good.
It was perfect.
I mean, I saw him... because he's in court now, which is exciting, blethering on about how, you know, the judges kept me from my son's graduation, which is a complete lie, by the way. And I thought, that's Trump. You know, it's sort of, it could only be Trump.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't have a name, does he? He's like Twiggy or Pelé, you know, it's Trump.
Okay, next question, please. One more question. Hi, both. Were either of you the victim of a honey trap? If not, just how disappointed were you? Thank you, Snatch.
We should give some context for this, really, shouldn't we?
Go on.
So it's, I think Steph is, I may be wrong, but I think Steph is asking this question with reference to William Ragg.
Yes.
The Hazel Grove MP who has, it says in his statement, voluntarily given up the Conservative whip because... he'd been chatting with someone on Grindr, the LGBTQ app, who had subsequently asked him for the telephone numbers of other people and had some compromising material on him. And he felt obliged to oblige them with the numbers. And
incredible.
So his political career is now, I think, drawing to a close.
Grindering
to a halt. Yes. So have you been...
I've never been honey-trapped, unfortunately.
No.
Much to my regret.
I mean, it's one of the things... I mean, I'm absolutely not. How disappointed were you? I mean, a number of things I'm hugely disappointed about. But, like, no one ever asked me to be a spy, right?
Yeah, I know that.
And it rankles, right? Because I know one or two
but
people...
But then again, Matt, that's exactly what a spy would say.
Yeah, and this is the Rory Stewart argument, isn't it? You know, that... the reason he weaves his own yogurt and, you know, dresses as a humble Bedouin is because he's actually working for MI6. I don't buy this, actually. No, yeah. I mean, I'm more annoyed at not being asked to be a spy than I am at not having been the victim of a honey trap. Because, you know, to be honest, I don't think honey traps tend to end well, do they?
I think also, I think we are perhaps lucky that, well, maybe not. I mean, maybe we're prime targets because we're naive about technology to a degree that some kids aren't, because they're not, everything's not native to us, is it? You know,
yeah.
It's all. And so maybe, do you think that makes us, do you think our youths, our respective youths growing up,
yes,
and having to cope with the hustle and bustle of the real world and rejections, yes, and stuff, does that give you more armour, do you think, than
well, I think that would make me today sound as if I had more guile than I do, really.
Yeah, maybe I'm getting
I think what is certainly true is that spam,
yeah,
is essentially, you know, low, I mean, it's on technology, but it's low tech honey trap, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I noticed I was cleaning out my spam folder the other day, and half of it, it's so rubbish. It's sort of Teresa Bitcoin, yeah, right? It's all bloody Bitcoin. It's, yeah, you know, biscuit Bitcoin, you know, yeah, you want to buy biscuit Bitcoin. No, I don't, you know, I really don't. And also, like, sort of make an effort, you, yeah, know?
Have you ever fallen for a con?
No, I've been... I've had my Twitter hacked, but that's not the same.
No.
I've never fallen for a con, which is tempting fate, really. But I'm always amazed that hasn't happened yet, because, yeah, it seems to me that our phones are so permeable.
Yeah.
Do you remember the things... I think it was Snowden found out Pegasus.
That's right. This the Israeli,
yes, design?
Yeah, yeah.
There is now where you have to actually sort of, you have to know a fair amount about the phone or the device. Now you just need the number.
Yeah.
There's a, wow, Pegasus 2 out there.
Wow.
You just need the number, and forces unknown can, private or public, can just zero in on your...
Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this will be one of the great stories of the 21st century, is the fact that actually everything is transparent. I think it already is, to be, yeah, honest. And whether we care...
It occurred to me, you know, the other day, because also the other theme of the 20th century is everything is now manipulatable. Is,
yes,
that a word? Able to be manipulated,
yes,
visually, graphically,
totally,
video. So in future, if you've got a picture of, say, William Ragg with three men
you
doing something unspeakable to him, as is alleged on a spreadsheet I've seen on Twitter, then he could quite happily in 5 or 6 years turn around and say that's completely generated by AI and,
yes,
prove it.
It's,
know,
a good turning around of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
That actually just say that's deep fake.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although I somehow feel that won't necessarily save him, or indeed lots of others.
Yeah.
But I mean, the other way around is equally terrifying, because, I mean, deep fakes are now getting so good. And I mean, let's think about it from a newsroom perspective. You know, imagine being in the newsroom of the New European, you know, and some, yeah, suddenly a picture drops,
yes,
showing a prominent politician in an interesting situation, let's,
yeah,
say. You know, the technology you need now to truly be able to detect,
yeah,
a well-made deepfake is getting harder and harder and harder.
Yeah.
I mean, the race is, you know, it is a two-horse race, but who's ahead varies.
It's really, really interesting topic.
It's going to become a huge issue.
I mean, there's this thing, I mean, we've sort of meandered into an entirely different topic here, but I thought that it's another very interesting point of law that is so much a story of our times is the potential legislation around creating a fake kind of pornography,
yes,
picture,
yes,
based on somebody real,
yes,
even if it's not for sharing, if it's,
yes,
you know, so you've got, which I think is absolutely
vile.
Right, can you imagine the invasive, I think Kathy Newman from Channel 4
said
it happened to her, like, and she watched it thinking she was a tough news reporter and she's seen it all, but felt really
revolting.
But the fact that we've got to that point now where, you know, people talk about policing whether you can buy cigarettes or not, you're now having to police people photoshopping pornography in their own,
yes,
bedrooms. I mean, it's where's it all going? It's,
well, and one of the big problems is that the number of politicians, lawmakers,
yeah,
who are actually literate enough in technology,
yeah,
is, you can count to deal with these.
Well, and who are dumb as shit enough to respond to
but,
this,
I mean,
kind of stuff?
You know, I remember being deposed at the, well, not deposed formally, but at the Select Committee on, when Damien Collins was head of the Culture Select Committee on social media and fake news and so on.
Yeah.
And it was very striking to me that really Damien was the only MP there who was totally on top of the tech, the issues and so on.
Right.
I mean, what we need, you know, this is absolutely key to an MP's role now, and very few MPs, yeah, understandably,
yeah,
who, I mean, keeping up with tech is, yeah, hard enough as a job, let alone as a,
absolutely,
an aspect of your role as a legislator.
Absolutely. Well, I can assure everybody that this podcast has been created by two real human beings sat fully clothed in a, yes, small room.
I'm afraid
that we're not going to have to pay to get out of.
I can't let you do that.
Thank you to all our questions.
Thank you.
Please send any feedback and any other questions you have to 2matts@tnepublishing.com. That's the number 2matts@tnepublishing.com. Don't forget our special subscription offer. You can just go to theneweuropean.co.uk/2matts, and there's a link in the show notes, and you get a copy of James O'Brien's How They Broke Britain, signed by the author, absolutely free. Until our next regular podcast on Friday,
have a great Sunday,
and thank you to our producers. They'll have a great Sunday too. Thank you,
enjoy
Rethink
it.
Audio guys, bye.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.